rise, please. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session.
Please be seated, everyone.
Good morning and welcome to the Idaho Supreme Court, appearing today in Twin Falls County, Idaho. This morning, we are pleased to welcome students from Valley High School to join us in this hearing. It's a rare occasion that we have a class from the high school, and we're glad you made the trek over from the Eden-Hazleton area, and we welcome you. This case is a little different than most you would hear if you were in our court. This is an appeal from the Department of Labor in Idaho. And they make determinations about who gets unemployment and how much. And in this matter, the appellant is with us representing himself today. And so we welcome Nathaniel Sheehan. Am I saying your name right, sir? He will be presenting his case on his own without a lawyer, which is commendable in some ways. It's not an easy thing to do, and kind of nerve-wracking, I'm sure, with a courtroom full. The State of Idaho's Department of Labor is represented by an attorney, and that is Mr. Rafael Acaza. Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
And so what will happen this morning is these parties will each argue their case. Mr. Sheehan has 20 minutes. He has total of 30, but he's asked for 10 minutes to speak if he wishes at the end after Mr. Acaza gives his 30 minutes. So with that, Mr. Sheehan or Mr. Acaza, do either of you have anything you'd like to bring up before your arguments?
No, I don't.
There you go. Mr. Sheehan, you may proceed.
How are you all doing?
Good.
I guess I'll just go ahead and start from the beginning. In 2020, I was working for Sun Valley Resort up in Sun Valley, Idaho, and I was the terrain park manager there since 2015, and it was a job I really enjoyed, and then COVID hit, and March 15th, they decided to shut down, and I was laid off. And they suggested that we all go on unemployment, and you know the future was kind of uncertain for a lot of people, of course. And so I did. I went on unemployment, and I checked in on a weekly basis. I stayed in town, and I was looking for other opportunities around the Ketchum area. But if you're familiar with Ketchum, it's a very small town, and pretty much every business shut down at that point. And, as I was checking in with Sun Valley, it became pretty clear to me that, they said, well, it was a full-time year-round position, and moving forward, it may not be. It may only be seasonal, in which case I would lose benefits. And so I was in a position at that point to potentially look elsewhere for employment. I continued to check in weekly with Sun Valley to see if anything had changed. And, they were as uncertain at that point as we all were. So I went to Pennsylvania, where I'm originally from, to look for work there. And
sure, before we get to Pennsylvania, could you tell us a little bit about how you started receiving unemployment benefits?
Sure. So I applied for unemployment benefits just, based on the fact that I had been laid off due to COVID. And that was, I believe, probably in April. So I started receiving weekly checks, just based on that.
You said you started receiving weekly checks. Would they mail those checks to you? How did you get the checks?
They were wired.
Okay, so it was direct deposit, wired funds?
Yes. So I went to Pennsylvania. I'm from a town that has a ski resort in it, so I thought maybe there'd be an opportunity there for me, the experience that I have. And, I kind of ran into the same roadblocks that I did living here in Ketchum. But I did inquire about several jobs. I think the most promising one was, inquiring about being a terrain park manager at that ski resort, which was, it's owned by Vail Resorts, and this is important, because I did end up working for a Vail Resort, in Vermont, a little bit down the road, so I inquired, about that job and a few others in Pennsylvania. It didn't work out, unfortunately, and I came back here and honestly didn't really know what to do. And I was, during the whole time that I was in Pennsylvania, I was continued to stay in contact with Sun Valley and, ask them if there's any work that I can do, getting work in a different department potentially, just anything that I can do. And it was midsummer 2020 that I stopped receiving funds from unemployment. So I made some phone calls, and I was notified that because I left the area that I wasn't available for work. And so this is the whole case that, that I was trying to have the opportunity to appeal and present my case, why I was out of the area, why I was potentially available for work. If Sun Valley called me and said, hey, you can start tomorrow, I would be on the next flight. I was always available for work, and not only that, I was looking for work in Pennsylvania. And that's the case that I always wanted to have the opportunity to explain to them. After several phone calls with them and conversations with them, the Idaho Department of Unemployment, they said, okay, well, we will grant you a hearing. They said specifically, keep an eye out for an email with information on the date of when the hearing will be. We're very busy right now. It'll potentially be up to 8 to 12 weeks before you hear from us. And they said, in the meantime, continue to file for unemployment weekly, as long as you remain unemployed, which I did. And I started to receive unemployment again, which was great because I was in kind of rough shape at that point financially. It was late summer at that point, and I continued looking for work, and then I started to receive some letters in the mail saying, and my unemployment got suspended again, and I received letters in the mail saying, not only do you owe all of this money back, all of the unemployment that you ever got, plus penalties, to the tune of over $11,000. So that was a huge financial blow and a huge stress in my life. I tried to make some phone calls, and all I wanted was the opportunity to explain to them that, I was in this situation not by choice at all. And I was looking for work the best way that I could. So in the fall, as winter started to approach, I was continuing to call Sun Valley, and they said, well, we can have you back, but it won't be until potentially December, and it may only be seasonal. And so I continued to look for work because I can't just rely on seasonal work. And it was a position that I really loved and it had always been full-time year-round with benefits and, just having that sense of security. To know that I wouldn't have that anymore, I continued looking. And that's when I was told about this opportunity in Vermont and at Mount Snow, Vermont, which is also a Vail resort. And so that's why it's kind of correlated to my trip to Pennsylvania, because that was a Vail resort as well. And my stepfather is senior management there, so he has some connections And so he was the one that told me about the opportunity in Vermont. And so I inquired about that. I applied for that job. I interviewed, and it was sounded like a great opportunity for me. It was the same position that I had at Sun Valley, terrain park manager, full-time year-round. It was great. And so I decided to accept that position. It certainly seemed like the best opportunity I had at the time. You know, it wasn't ideal that I had to move to Vermont. I really love Idaho. But it was kind of what I had to do at the time. So I packed up my truck and I drove to Vermont, and I started in December of, 2020. And it was great that, you know, the job was great. I didn't have housing there. A lot of ski resorts offer employee housing. And Mount Snow did too, but because of COVID, they didn't. They shut that down. And so I asked my boss, you know, is there anything you can do for me? And he did put me in contact with a couple of people that he knew in the area. But nothing panned out until January of 2021. So I literally slept in the back of my truck for all of December of 2020 and didn't have a place until I finally found one in January. It was pretty cold. Vermont's a pretty cold place. So once I did find a place, I set up an address, and I still, you know, I checked my email on a daily basis. I still hadn't heard anything about a hearing date, and so I called in January just to follow up and check in. You know, they did tell me it was going to be 8 to 12 weeks, so I figured maybe they were still backed up with all the other phone calls that I'm sure they were getting. And it was at that time that I found out that I had missed the date. They mailed a letter to me. They didn't email it to me. And I specifically remember on this phone call with them that they said, check for an email, which I did on a daily basis. And so I missed my hearing opportunity. And so then, you know, they said, well, it's out of our hands now. It was, I think, went to the Industrial Commission. It's a little bit confusing, the paths that I had to go through. But so they said, talk to them, appeal to them. They said, no, we're upholding our decision. You missed the date, and so that's that. And so so I appealed it as high as I can, and here we are. So really, I didn't plan any of this. I'd never had any, you know, if you would ask me in the fall of 2020 where I would live, you know, the following 6 months, I never would have guessed Vermont. I didn't plan to live in my truck for a little over a month or not have a physical address. You know, it was a crazy time for a lot of people, myself included. And so essentially what I'm asking for is just simply the opportunity to present my case and explain why I traveled outside the area, and that I most certainly was always available for work, and that I was looking for work. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Puzzle. And I failed to mention to the counselor, Mr. Sheehan, and students that we are a court applied. Justice Bailey has been excused due to family matter today, and she will participate fully in this case. She sends her regards. Thank you. Certainly.
Chief Justice, Justices, Mr. Chen, good morning, and may it please the court. As the court is well aware, under the court's order of reconditional dismissal of August 25th, 2021. The only issue left in this appeal is the appeal to the order denying Mr. Sheehan's motion for reconsideration. The Industrial Commission denied the motion for reconsideration on March 29, 2021. Under Idaho Code Section 72-1367, Mr. Sheehan had 20 days to bring a motion for reconsideration after that order was issued. But Mr. Sheehan did not bring his appeal until May 12, 2021, 44 days later. By then, the order dismissing his appeal had become final, and the commission lacked jurisdiction to disturb it. So sympathetic as the Mr. Sheehan's circumstances might have been, the commission was powerless to look at his plight because there was simply no jurisdiction over it.
Suggested that he was told to expect an email. Is that a common procedure that's used in some cases?
If you look at the rules here, Justice Miller, two things. One, there's no record that Mr. Sheehan made the commission aware that he was only reachable by email. But to answer your question, the rules do state that one can receive communications electronically, but there simply is no evidence on the record that there was a reaching out about being contacted exclusively by email, or that any arrangements were made in that regard.
Right, but I want to follow up on Justice Mueller's question. Does the department provide notices via email in other cases?
I'm only aware of the notices in the record in this case, and those were sent by mail. So it's possible that, I believe it is entirely possible that they will give you email notices or reach out by telephone if you cannot be contacted otherwise, but I cannot cite you to the rule. And in the record in this case, the communications that pertain to the motion for reconsideration were all done by mail. It is very unfortunate that Mr. Sheehan is not represented, but that does not excuse him with complying with the court's order about conditional dismissal and addressing the only issue in this appeal, which is the denial of his motion for reconsideration, or from complying with Idaho Appellate Rule 35A6 and citing to legal authorities into the record in making his case. As this court has held in several cases recently in Walker v. Meyer, pro se litigants are not entitled to special consideration or leniency because they represent themselves. Rather, pro se litigants must conform to the same standards and rules as litigants represented by attorneys. And along the same lines, as sympathetic as we all are to Mr. Sheehan's plight and also to the sincerity of his appeal, the court should disregard all of Mr. Sheehan's factual allegations in his brief because they are not supported by citations to the record. They are unsworn as well. And the court has made clear that it would not consider an appeal on appeal on sworn statements of fact in an appellate brief that were not part of the record below. In Sparks v. Laura Drake Insurance, the court stated, Sparks relies on her own unsworn testimony within her briefing as the basis for why the evidentiary hearing should have been reopened. However, because Sparks' unsworn testimony is not part of the record, we cannot consider the allegations set forth in her brief on appeal. For these and the other arguments in our brief, we respectfully request that the court deny Mr. Sheehan's appeal. And if there are no further questions, I will yield to Mr. Sheehan for any additional comments he might have.
Thank you, sir. Madam Clerk, how much time does Mr. Sheehan have for rebuttal? Mr. Sheehan, you do have 18 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to make any additional statements. You're welcome to do so.
In terms of notifying the unemployment of a change of mailing address, when I was in Pennsylvania, I hadn't changed my mailing address. I didn't move there. I was only there looking for work. So there was no need to notify them of any change of address. And also, when I was in Pennsylvania, there was... any contact that I had from them was electronically, and I may have received some mail during that time. Honestly, I don't remember, but I came back to Idaho, and my P.O. box, my mailing address, hadn't changed, so there was no need to notify them of that. And then the other time that I left and that I actually moved was to Vermont. And as I stated, I didn't have a mailing address for the first month that I was there. I was living in my truck. When I did find more permanent residence, January of 2021, I did call them, and I think I went on to the website and changed my information on the website and did update my mailing address. Also, I wasn't aware of the fact that I needed to be so prompt in changing my mailing address because, as I stated, when I spoke to them on the phone, they said, keep an eye out for an email. And so my email hadn't changed, and I did check that on a daily basis. So while I did notify them of a change of address, I didn't realize that that was going to be something that would put me in the position that I'm in today. Do I have proof of that phone call? No, unfortunately I don't. But that is what I was told by an employee of the Idaho Department of Unemployment. Unfortunately, I guess you'll have to take me on my word for that, but there would be no reason for me to, to be dishonest about that. If they said, check, keep an eye out in the mail for a letter notifying you of your hearing date, I most certainly would have done that. I really wanted that that opportunity to present my case. So
Mr. Sheehan, Mr. Kaiser has described the situation as engendering sympathy, and I don't want to suggest otherwise. It does engender sympathy. But we have rules and processes that we're obliged to follow. And you said you just have to take me at my word on that, and I believe you. I'm not here suggesting otherwise. But one of our processes is that in order to establish facts, you have to submit a document under penalty of perjury to show the truthfulness of that statement. And unfortunately, you didn't have a lawyer and you didn't have anybody advising you. And one of the problems with representing oneself is that there are a lot of pitfalls, and this case exemplifies that. I believe, but I don't have the ability to conclude the case in your favor without something that was under testimony or sworn under oath, which is what Mr. Kaiser is suggesting. There's an old adage about Clarence Dell, who was probably one of the preeminent trial lawyers for the 20th century. And he was charged with a crime, and the crime was jury tampering. And he hired a lawyer. And the press couldn't fathom why somebody who was the best lawyer in the country would hire a lawyer. And he famously said, "A person who represents himself as a fool for a client." And I'm not suggesting you're a fool. I'm suggesting I have great sympathy for where you are, but I unfortunately have very little by way of options. If I could wave a wand and undo the procedural impediments that prevented you from presenting your case, I would do it in a heartbeat. But those, unfortunately, are not options that are available to me or to us.
I appreciate Justice Stegner's comments. It's well stated. Thank you for traveling here. Do you have anything additional?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Sheehan, counsel, we thank you. Now, it's under advisement. Mr. Sheehan, we do render written opinions, so does the clerk have a good place to send that, because they typically come by mail or email, but make sure you talk to Ms. Gabby Payne about where to get you a copy of the opinion.
And our tradition is to shake hands with the arguers, and we'll come down and shake your hand.
All right.